friends and gossiped about it for months. The Chandrian heard and showed up to steal it. I finished with a bit of a flourish. Denner frowned.
Doesn't hold together. If all they wanted was the item, they could have waited until after the wedding and just killed the newlyweds, much easier.
That took some of the wind out of my sails.
You're right.
It would make more sense if what they really wanted was to get rid of all knowledge of the thing, like old King Kelon, when he thought his regent was going to expose him for treason. Kill the fellow's whole family and burn down their estate to make sure no word got out or evidence was left for anyone to find. Denner gestured off to the south. Since everyone who knew the secret would be at the wedding, the Chandrian can come in, kill everyone who knows anything, and either destroy or steal whatever it is. She made a motion with the flat of her hand. Clean sweep.
I sat stunned. Not so much by what Denner had said, which was, of course, better than my own guess. I was remembering what had happened to my own troop.
Someone's parents have been singing entirely the wrong sort of songs.
But they hadn't just killed my parents. They killed everyone who had been close enough to hear even a part of the song. Denner rolled herself into my blanket and curled up with her back to the fire.
I will allow you to ponder my vast cleverness while I sleep. Wake me when you need anything else figured out.
I stayed awake mostly through an effort of will. I'd had a long, grueling day, riding 60 miles and walking a half dozen more. But Denner was hurt and needed her sleep more. Besides, I wanted to keep an eye out for any more signs of the blue light to the north. There weren't any. I fed the fire and wondered vaguely if Will and Sim were worried about my sudden disappearance back at the university. What of Arwill and Elksadal and Kilvin? Would they wonder what happened to me? I should have left a note. I had no way to track the time as the clouds still hid the stars, but I had fed the fire at least 6 or 7 times when I saw Denner stiffen and come suddenly awake. She didn't bolt upright, but her breathing stopped, and I saw her dark eyes dart about wildly, as if she didn't know where she was.
Sorry, I said, mostly to give her something familiar to focus on. Did I wake you?
She relaxed and sat up.
No, not at all. I'm done sleeping for a bit. You want to turn?
She rubbed her eyes and peered at me over the fire.
Silly question. You look like hell.
She began to unwrap the blanket from around herself.
Here.
I waved it off.
Keep it. My cloak is good enough for me.
I put my hood up and lay down on the grass.
What a gentleman.
She teased gently, wrapping it across her shoulders. I pillowed my head with my arm, and while I was trying to think of a clever response, I fell asleep. I woke from a dim dream of moving through a crowded street to the sight of Denner's face above me, rosy and sharply shadowed by the firelight. All in all, a very pleasant way to wake up. I was about to say something to that effect when she put her finger over my lips, distracting me in about 18 different ways.
Quiet, she said softly. Listen.
I sat up.
Do you hear it?
She asked after a moment. I cocked my head.
Just the wind.
She shook her head and cut me off with a gesture.
There.
I did hear it. At first I thought it was some disturbed rocks sliding down the hill, but no, this didn't fade into the distance like that would. It sounded more like something being dragged up the side of the hill. I got to my feet and looked around. While I'd slept, the clouds had blown away, and now the moon lit the surrounding countryside in pale silver light. Our wide fire pit was brim full of shimmering coals. Just then, not far down the hillside, I heard. To say I heard a branch breaking would mislead you. When a person moving through the woods breaks a branch, it makes a short, sharp snap. This is because any branch a man breaks accidentally is small and breaks quickly. What I heard was no twig snapping. It was a long, cracking sound, the sound a leg-thick branch makes when it's torn from a tree. Crack! Then as I turned to look at Denner, I heard the other noise. How can I describe it? When I was young, my mother took me to see a menagerie in Senarin. It was the only time I had ever seen a lion, and the only time I had heard one roar. The other children in the crowd were frightened, but I laughed, delighted. The sound was so deep and low that I could feel it rumble in my chest. I loved the feeling, and remember it to this day. The sound I heard on the hill near Trebon was not a lion's roar, but I felt it in my chest the same way. It was a grunt, deeper than a lion's roar, closer to the sound of thunder in the distance. Another branch broke, almost on the crest of the hill. I looked in that direction and saw a huge shape dimly lined by the firelight. I felt the ground shudder slightly under my feet. Denna turned to look at me, her eyes wide with panic. I grabbed hold of her arm and ran toward the opposite side of the hill. Denna kept up with me at first, then planted her feet when she saw where I was headed. "Don't be stupid," she hissed. "We'll break our necks if we run down that in the dark." She cast around wildly, then looked up at the nearby greystones. "Get me up there, and I'll haul you up after." I laced my fingers together to make a step. She put her foot into it, and I heaved so hard I almost threw her into the air where she could catch the edge of the stone. I waited a brief moment until she swung her leg up, then I slung my travel sack over my shoulder and scrambled up the side of the massive stone. Rather, I should say, I scrambled at the side of the massive stone. It was worn smooth by ages of weather and didn't have any handholds to speak of. I slid to the ground, my hands scrabbling ineffectually. I bolted to the other side of the arch, hopped up onto one of the lower stones, and made another leap. I hit the rock hard, all along the front of my body, knocking the wind out of me and banging my knee. My hands gripped at the top of the arch, but I couldn't find any perches. Denna caught me. If this were some heroic ballad, I would tell you how she clasped my hand firmly and pulled me to safety. But the truth is, she got hold of my shirt with one hand while the other made a tight fist in my hair. She hauled hard and kept me from falling long enough for me to catch a grip and scramble to the top of the stone with her. As we lay there, panting, we peered over the edge of the stone. Down on the hilltop, the dim shape was beginning to move into the circle of our firelight. Half hidden in the shadows, it looked larger than any animal I had ever seen, big as a loaded wagon. It was black, with a massive body like a bull's. It came closer, moving in an odd shuffle, not like a bull or a horse. The wind fanned the fire, causing it to flare up, and I saw it carried its thick body close to the ground, legs out to the side like a lizard. When it came farther into the light, the comparison was impossible to avoid. It was a huge lizard, not long like a snake. It was squat like a cinder brick, its thick neck blending into a head shaped like a massive flat wedge. It covered half the distance from the crest of the hill to our fire in a single, spastic burst of speed. It grunted again, deep like rumbling thunder, and I felt it in my chest. As it came closer, it moved past the other grey stone that lay in the grass, and I realized my eyes weren't playing tricks on me. It was bigger than the grey stone. 6 feet high at the shoulder, 15 feet long, big as a horse cart, massive as a dozen bulls tied together. It moved its thick head back and forth, working its wide mouth open and closed, tasting the air. Then there was a burst of blue flame. The sudden light of it was blinding, and I heard Denna cry out beside me. I ducked my head and felt a wash of heat roll over us. Rubbing at my eyes, I looked down again and saw the thing move closer to the fire. It was black, scaled, massive. It grunted again like thunder, then bobbed its head and breathed another great gout of billowing blue fire. It was a dragon. Chapter 75. Interlude. Obedience. In the Waystone Inn, Kvothe paused expectantly.
The moment stretched out until Chronicler looked up from his page.
"I'm giving you the opportunity to say something," Quoth said. "Something along the lines of, 'That can't be,' or 'There's no such thing as dragons.'"
Chronicler wiped the nib of his pen clean.
"It's not really my place to comment on the story," he said placidly. "If you say you saw a dragon..."
He shrugged. Quoth gave him a profoundly disappointed look.
"This from the author of The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus. This from Devon Lockies, the great debunker. This from Devon Lockies, who agreed not to interrupt or change a single word of the story he is recording."
Chronicler lay his pen down and massaged his hand.
"Because those were the only conditions under which he could get access to a story he very much desired."
Quoth gave him a level look.
"Have you ever heard the expression, 'White mutiny'?"
"I have,"
Chronicler said with a thin smile.
"I could say it, Reshi," Bast said brightly. "I haven't agreed to anything."
Quoth looked back and forth between them, then sighed.
"There are few things as nauseating as pure obedience," he said. "Both of you would do well to remember that."
He gestured for Chronicler to pick his pen up again.
"Very well. It was a dragon."
Chapter 76. The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus.
"It's a dragon,"
Denna whispered.
"Tailu, hold and overroll us. It's a dragon."
"It's not a dragon," I said. "There's no such thing as dragons."
"Look at it," she hissed at me. "It's right there. Look at the huge goddamn dragon."
"It's a dracus," I said.
"It's goddamn huge,"
Denna said with a tinge of hysteria in her voice.
"It's a goddamn huge dragon, and it's going to come over here and eat us."
"It doesn't eat meat," I said. "It's an herbivore. It's like a big cow."
Denna looked at me and started to laugh. Not hysterical laughter, but the helpless laughter of someone who's just heard something so funny they can't help but bubble over with it.
She put her hands over her mouth and shook with it. The only sound was a low huffing that escaped through her fingers.
There was another flash of blue fire from below. Denna froze mid-laugh, then took her hands away from her mouth. She looked at me, her eyes wide, and spoke softly with a slight quaver in her voice.
"Mmm."
We had both gone from terrified to safe so quickly that we were close to laughing from sheer relief anyway. So when she convulsed with laughter again, muffling it with her hands, I started to laugh too, my belly shaking as I tried not to make any noise. We lay there like two giggling children, while below us the great beast grunted and snuffed around our fire, occasionally sending up gouts of flame. After a long several minutes, we regained control of ourselves. Denna wiped tears away from her eyes and drew a deep, shaky breath. She slid closer to me until the left side of her body was pressed close up against my right.
"Listen,"
she said softly as we both looked over the edge of the stone.
"That thing does not graze," she said. "It's huge. It could never get enough food. And look at its mouth. Look at those teeth."
"Exactly. They're flat, not pointed. It eats trees, whole trees. Look at how big it is. Where could it possibly find enough meat? It would have to eat 10 deer every day. There's no way it could survive." She turned her head to look at me.
"How the hell do you know this?"
"I read about it at the university," I said. "A book called The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus. It uses the fire in a mating display. It's like a bird's plumage."
"You mean that thing down there..."
She groped for words, her mouth working silently for a moment.
"Is going to try and tap our campfire?"
She looked for a moment as if she was going to burst into laughter again, but she drew a deep, shuddering breath instead, regaining her composure.
"That's something I have to see."
We both felt a shudder in the stone underneath us, coming up from the ground below. At the same time,
things grew noticeably darker. Looking down, we saw the Dracus rolling in the fire like a hog in a wallow. The ground shook as it wriggled around, crushing the fire underneath itself.
That thing must weigh,
Denna stalled out, shaking her head.
Maybe 5 tons, I guessed. 5 at least. It could come and get us. It could push over these stones.
I don't know about that, I said, slapping the stone under my hand, trying to sound more certain than I really was.
These have been here for a long time. We're safe.
While rolling in our overlarge campfire, the Dracus had scattered burning branches around the top of the hill. It now wandered to where a half-charred log lay smouldering in the grass. The Dracus snuffed, then rolled, crushing the log into the earth. Then it came back to its feet, snuffed the log again, and ate it. It didn't chew, it bolted the log whole, like a frog getting a cricket down into its gullet. It did this several times, moving in a circle around the now largely extinguished fire. It snuffed, rolled on the burning pieces, then ate them after they were extinguished.
That makes sense, I suppose, Denna said, watching it. It starts fires and lives in the woods. If it didn't have something in its head that made it want to put out fires, it wouldn't survive very long.
That's probably why it came here, I said. It saw our fire. After several minutes of snuffing and rolling, the Dracus came back to the flat bed of coals that was all that remained of our fire. It circled it a few times, then walked over it, and lay down. I cringed, but it just shifted back and forth like a hen settling into a nest. The hilltop below was now entirely dark, except for the pale moonlight.
How can I never have heard of these things?
Denna asked.
They're very rare, I said. People tend to kill them because they don't understand they're relatively harmless, and they don't reproduce very quickly. That one down there is probably 200 years old, about as big as they get.
I marveled at it. I bet there aren't more than a couple of 100 Dracus that size in the whole world. We watched for another couple of minutes, but there was no movement from below. Denna gave a jaw-popping yawn.
Oh, God, I'm exhausted.
There's nothing like the certain knowledge of your own death to tucker you out.
She rolled over onto her back, then onto her side, then back facing towards me, trying to get comfortable.
Lord, it's cold up here, she shivered visibly. I can see why it's cuddled up on our fire.
We could go down and get the blanket, I suggested. She snorted.
Not likely.
She shivered visibly, wrapping her arms around her chest. Here. I stood up and took off my cloak. Wrap up in this. It's not much, but it's better than the bare stone. I held it out to her. I'll watch you while you sleep and make sure you don't fall off. She stared at me for a long moment, and I half expected her to beg off. But after a moment, she took it and wrapped it around herself.
You, Master Kvothe, certainly know how to show a girl a good time.
Wait until tomorrow, I said. I'm just getting started. I sat there quietly, trying not to shiver, and eventually Denna's breathing leveled off. I watched her sleep, with the calm contentment of a boy who has no idea of how foolish he is, or what unexpected tragedies the following day will bring. Chapter 77 Bluffs. I woke without remembering when I had fallen asleep. Denna was shaking me gently.
Don't move too quickly, she said. It's a long way down.
I slowly uncurled, nearly every muscle in my body complaining at how it had been treated yesterday. My thighs and calves were tight, hard knots of pain. Only then did I realize I was wearing my cloak again.
Did I wake you up?
I asked Denna. I don't remember.
In a way you did, she said. You nodded off and tipped right onto me. You didn't even flicker a lid when I cussed you out.
Denna trailed off as she watched me slowly come to my feet.
Good Lord, you look like someone's arthritic grandfather.
You know how it is, I said. You're always stiffest when you wake up.
She smirked.
We women folk don't have that problem as a rule.
Her expression grew serious as she watched me.
You're serious, aren't you?
I rode about 60 miles yesterday before I met up with you, I said.
I'm not really used to that. Ugh. And when I jumped last night, I hit the rock pretty hard.
Are you hurt?
Absolutely, I said, especially in my everywhere.
Oh, she gasped, her hands going to her mouth. Your beautiful hands.
I looked down and saw what she meant. I must have hurt them, rather badly, in my wild attempt to climb the Greystone last night. My musician's calluses had saved my fingertips for the most part, but my knuckles were scraped badly and crusted with blood. Other parts of me hurt so much that I hadn't even noticed. My stomach clenched at the sight of them, but when I opened and closed my hands, I could tell they were just painfully skinned, not seriously injured. As a musician, I always worried that something might happen to my hands, and my work as an artificer had doubled that anxiety.
It looks worse than it is, I said.
How long has the Dracus been gone? I asked. At least a couple of hours. It wandered away a little after the sun came up.
I looked down from my high vantage on the Greystone Arch. Last evening, the hilltop had been a uniform expanse of green grass. This morning it looked like a battlefield. The grass was crushed in places, burned to stubble in others. There were deep furrows dug in the earth where the lizard had rolled or dragged its heavy body across the turf. Getting down from the Greystone was harder than getting up had been. The top of the arch was about 12 feet off the ground, higher than was convenient for jumping. Normally I wouldn't have worried about it, but in my stiff, bruised condition, I worried I'd land awkwardly and turn my ankle. Eventually, we managed it by using the strap of my travel sack as a makeshift rope. While Denner braced herself and held one end, I lowered myself down. The sack ripped wide open, of course, scattering my belongings, but I made it to the ground with nothing more serious than a grass stain. Then Denner hung from the lip of the rock, and I grabbed her legs, letting her slide down slowly. Despite the fact that I was bruised all down my front side, the experience did a lot to improve my mood. I gathered up my things and sat down with needle and thread to sew my travel sack back together. After a moment, Denner returned from her brief trip into the trees, pausing briefly to pick up the blanket we'd left below. It had several large claw rents from when the Drakkas had walked over it.
"Have you ever seen one of these before?" I asked, holding out my hand.
She raised an eyebrow at me.
"How many times have I heard that one?"
Grinning, I handed her the lump of black iron I'd got from the tinker. She looked it over curiously.
"Is this a lodestone?"
"I'm surprised you recognize it."
"I knew a fellow who used one as a paperweight,"
she sighed disparagingly.
"He made a special point of how, despite the fact that it was so valuable and exceedingly rare, he used it as a paperweight."
She sniffed.
"He was a prat. Do you have any iron?"
"Fish around in there." I pointed to my jumbled possessions.
"There's bound to be something."
Denner sat on one of the low greystones and played with the lodestone and a piece of broken iron buckle. I slowly sewed up my travel sack, then reattached the strap, stitching it several times so it wouldn't come loose. Denner was thoroughly engrossed by the lodestone.
"How does it work?"
she asked, pulling the buckle away and letting it snap back.
"Where does the pulling come from?"
"It's a type of galvanic force," I said, then hesitated, "which is a fancy way of saying that I've got no idea at all."
"I wonder if it only likes iron because it's made of iron," she mused, touching her silver ring to it with no effect. "If someone found a lodestone made of brass, would it like other brass?"
"Maybe it would like copper and zinc," I said. "That's what brass is made of." I turned the bag right side out and began packing up my things. Denner handed me back the lodestone and wandered off toward the destroyed remains of the fire pit.
"It ate all the wood before it left," she said.
I went over to look too. The area around the fire pit was a churned up mess. It looked like an entire legion of cavalry had ridden across it. I prodded a great piece of overturned sod turf with the toe of my boot, then bent to pick something up.
"Look at this."
Denner came closer, and I held something up for her to see. It was one of the Drakkas' scales, smooth and black, roughly as big as my palm, and shaped like a teardrop.
It was a quarter inch thick in the middle, tapering to the edges. I held it out to Denner. For you, m'lady. A memento. She hefted it in her hand. It's heavy, she said. I'll go find one for you. She skipped back to prod through the remains of the fire pit. I think it ate some of the rocks along with the wood. I know I gathered more than this to line the fire last night. Lizards eat rocks all the time, I said. It's how they digest their food. The rocks grind up the food in their guts. Denner eyed me skeptically. It's true, chickens do it too. She shook her head, looked away as she prodded in the churned-up earth. You know, at first I was kind of hoping you would turn this encounter into a song, but the more you talk about this thing, I'm not so sure. Cows and chickens. Where's your flair for the dramatic? It does well enough without exaggeration, I said. That scale is mostly iron, unless I miss my guess. How can I make that more dramatic than it already is? She held up the scale, looking at it closely. You're kidding. I grinned at her. The rocks around here are full of iron, I said. The Dracus eats the rocks, and slowly they get ground down in its gizzard. The metal slowly filters into the bones and scales. I took the scale and walked over to one of the greystones. Year after year, it sheds its skin, then eats it, keeping the iron in its system. After 200 years, I tapped the scale against the stone. It made a sharp ringing sound, somewhere between a bell and a piece of glazed ceramic. I handed it back to her. Back before modern mining people probably hunted them for their iron. Even nowadays, I'm guessing an alchemist would pay a pretty penny for the scales or bones. Organic iron is a real rarity. They could probably do all sorts of things with it. Denner looked down at the scale in her hand. You win. You can write the song. Her eyes lit with an idea. Let me see the lodestone. I dug it out of my bag and handed it to her. She brought the scale close to it, and they snapped sharply together, making the same odd ceramic ring again. She grinned and walked back over to the fire pit and started pushing the lodestone through the debris, hunting for more scales. I looked out toward the northern bluffs. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, I said, pointing off to a faint smudge of smoke rising from the trees. But something's smouldering down there. The marker stakes I planted are gone, but I think that's the direction we saw the blue fire last night. Denner moved the lodestone back and forth over the ruins of the fire pit. The Drakkers couldn't have been responsible for what happened at the Morthan farm. She gestured at the churned up earth and sod. There wasn't any of this sort of wreckage there. I'm not thinking about the farm, I said. I'm thinking someone's patron might have been roughing it last night with a cheery little campfire. Denner's face fell. And the Drakkers saw it. I wouldn't worry, I said quickly. If he's as clever as you say, he's probably safe as houses. Show me a house that's safe from that thing, she said grimly, handing me back my lodestone. Let's go have a look. It was only a few miles to where the faint line of smoke rose from the forest, but we made bad time. We were sore and tired, and neither of us was hopeful about what we would find when we reached our destination. When we walked, we shared my last apple and half of my remaining loaf of flatbread. I cut strips of birch bark, and Denner and I both picked at them and chewed. After an hour or so, the muscles in my legs relaxed to the point where walking was no longer painful. As we got closer, our progress slowed. Rolling hills were replaced with sharp bluffs and scree-covered slopes. We had to climb or go the long way around, sometimes doubling back before we found a way through. And there were distractions. We stumbled onto a patch of ripe ashberry that slowed us down for almost a full hour. Not long after that, we found a stream and stopped to drink and rest and wash. Again, my hope for a storybook dalliance was thwarted by the fact that the stream was only about 6 inches deep, not ideal for proper bathing. It was early afternoon before we finally came to the source of the smoke, and what we found was not at all what we expected. It was a secluded valley tucked into the bluffs. I say valley, but in truth it was more like a gigantic steppe among the foothills. On one side was a high cliff wall of dark rock,
and on the other was a sheer drop-off. Denner and I came at it from two different unapproachable angles before we finally found a way in. Luckily, the day was windless and the smoke rose straight as an arrow into the clear blue sky. If not for that to guide us, we probably never would have found the place. Once it had probably been a pleasant little piece of forest, but now it looked like it had been struck by a tornado. Trees were broken, uprooted, charred and smashed. Huge furrows of exposed earth and rock were dug everywhere, as if some giant farmer had gone raving mad while ploughing his field. 2 days ago, I wouldn't have been able to guess what would cause such destruction. But after what I had seen last night...
I thought you said they were harmless,
Denner said, turning to me. It went on a rampage here. Denner and I began to pick our way through the wreckage. The white smoke rose from the deep hole left by a large maple tree that had been tipped over. The fire was nothing more than a few coals smouldering in the bottom of the hole where the roots had been. I idly kicked a few more clods of dirt into the hole with the toe of my boot.
Well, the good news is that your patron isn't here. The bad news is...
I broke off, drawing a deeper breath.
Do you smell that?
Denner took a deep breath and nodded, wrinkling her nose. I climbed up onto the side of the fallen maple and looked around. The wind shifted, and the smell grew stronger, something dead and rotten.
I thought you said they don't eat meat,
Denner said, looking around nervously. I hopped down from the tree and made my way back to the cliff wall. There was a small log cabin there, smashed to flinders. The rotting smell was stronger.
Okay, Denner said, looking over the wreckage. This does not look harmless at all. We don't know if the Drakus was responsible for this, I said. If the Chandrian attacked here, the Drakus could have been lured by the fire and caused the destruction while putting it out. You think the Chandrian did this? She asked. That doesn't fit with anything I've ever heard of them. They're supposed to strike like lightning, then disappear. They don't visit, set some fires, then come back later to run a few errands.
I don't know what to think.
But two destroyed houses.
I began to sift through the wreckage.
It seems reasonable that they're related.
Denner drew in a sharp breath. I followed her line of sight and saw the arm protruding from under several heavy logs. I moved closer. Flies buzzed up and I covered my mouth a bit in a futile attempt to stave off the smell.
He's been dead for about 2 span.
I bent and picked up a tangle of shattered wood and metal.
Look at this. Bring it here and I'll look at it.
I brought it back to where she stood. The thing was broken, almost beyond recognition.
Crossbow. Didn't do him much good, she said.
Question is, why did he have it in the first place? I looked at the thick piece of blue steel that made the crossbar. This wasn't some hunting bow. This is what you use to kill a man in armor from across a field. They're illegal. Denner snorted.
Those sorts of laws don't get enforced out here, you know that.
I shrugged. The fact remains that this was an expensive piece of machinery. Why would someone living in a tiny cabin with a dirt floor own a crossbow worth 10 talents?
Maybe he knew about the Drakus.
Denner said, looking around nervously.
I wouldn't mind a crossbow right about now.
I shook my head. Drakus are shy. They stay away from people. Denner gave me a frank look, gesturing sarcastically at the wreckage of the cabin. Think about every wild creature in the forest, I said. All wild creatures avoid contact with people. Like you said, you've never even heard of the Drakus. There's a reason for that.
Maybe it's rabid.
That brought me up short. That's a terrifying thought. I looked around at the ruined landscape.
How on earth would you put something like that down? Can a lizard even catch the froth?
Denner shifted uncomfortably from one foot to the other, looking around nervously.
Is there anything else you'd like to look at here? Because I'm done with this place. I don't want to be here when that thing gets back.
Part of me feels like we should give this fellow a decent burial. Denner shook her head.
I'm not staying here that long. We can tell someone in town and they can take care of it. It could come back any minute. But why? I asked. Why does it keep coming back here? I pointed. That tree's been dead for a span of days, but that one just got torn up a couple of days ago. Why do you care?
Denner asked. The Chandrian,
I said firmly. I want to know why they were here. Do they control the Drakkas?
I don't think they were here, Denna said. At the Morthan farm, maybe, but this is just the work of a rabid cow lizard.
She gave me a long look, searching my face.
I don't know what you came here looking for, but I don't think you're going to find it.
I shook my head, looking around. I feel like this has to be connected to the farm.
I think you want it to be connected, she said gently. But this fellow's been dead a long while. You said so yourself, and remember the doorframe and the water trough at the farm.
She bent down and rapped a knuckle against one of the logs from the ruined cabin. It made a solid sound.
And look at the crossbow. The metal isn't rusted away. They weren't here.
I felt my heart sink in my chest. I knew she was right. Deep down, I knew I'd been grasping at straws. Still, it felt wrong giving up without trying everything possible. Denna took hold of my hand.
Come on, let's go.
She smiled and tugged on me. Her hand was cool and smooth in my own.
There's more interesting things to do than hunt.
There was a loud splintering noise off in the trees.
Crack!
Denna dropped my hand and turned to face the way we'd come.
No, she said. No, no, no.
The sudden threat of the Drakkas brought me back into focus. We're fine, I said, looking around. It can't climb. It's too heavy.
Climb what? A tree? It's been knocking those down for fun.
The bluffs. I pointed to the cliff wall that bordered this little section of forest. Come on. We scrambled to the base of the cliff, stumbling through furrows and jumping over fallen trees. Behind us, I heard the rumbling, thunder-like grunt. I darted a glance over my shoulder, but the Drakkas was still somewhere among the trees. We got to the base of the cliff and I started searching for a section both of us could climb. After a long, frantic minute, we emerged from a thick patch of sumac to find a swath of wildly churned-up dirt. The Drakkas had been digging there.
Look,
Denna pointed to a break in the cliff, a deep crack about 2 feet across. It was wide enough for a person to squeeze through, but too narrow for a huge lizard. There were sharp claw marks on the cliff wall and broken rock scattered around the churned-up earth. Denna and I squeezed into the narrow gap. It was dark, the only light coming from the narrow strip of blue sky high overhead. As I crept along, I was forced to turn sideways in places to make it through. When I brought my hands away from the walls, my palms were covered in black soot. Unable to dig its way in, apparently the Drakkas had breathed fire down into the narrow passage. After only a dozen feet, the crevasse widened slightly.
There's a ladder,
Denna said.
I'm going up. If that thing breathes fire at us, it will be like rainwater down a gully.
She climbed and I followed her. The ladder was crude but sturdy, and after 20 feet it opened out onto a piece of level ground. Dark stone surrounded us on three sides, but there was a clear view of the ruined cabin and the destroyed trees below. A wooden box was set against the cliff wall.
Can you see it?
Denner asked, peering down.
Tell me I didn't just skin my knees running from nothing.
I heard a dull whoomp, and I felt a wave of hot air rise up against my back. The Drakkas grunted again, and another wash of fire ran through the narrow gap below. Then there came a sudden, furious sound like nails on a slate as the Drakkas clawed madly against the base of the cliff. Denna gave me a frank look.
Harmless. It's not after us, I said. You saw, it was digging at that wall long before we ever got here.
Denna sat down.
What is this place?
Some sort of lookout, I said. You can see the whole valley from here.
Obviously it's a lookout, she sighed. I'm talking about the whole place.
I opened the wooden box that was up against the cliff wall. Inside was a rough wool blanket, a full water skin, some dried meat, and a dozen wickedly sharp crossbow bolts.
I don't know either, I admitted. Maybe the fellow was a fugitive.
The noise stopped below. Denna and I peered out over the ruined valley. Eventually the Drakkas moved away from the cliff. It walked slowly, its huge body digging an irregular rut into the ground.
It's not moving as quickly as it did last night, I said. Maybe it is sick. Maybe it's tired from a hard day's trying to track us down and kill us. She looked up at me. Sit down, you're making me nervous. We're not going anywhere for a while.
I sat down and we watched the Dracus make its plodding way to the middle of the valley. It went up to a tree about 30 feet tall and pushed it over without any noticeable effort. Then it began to eat it, leaves first. Next it crunched up branches thick as my wrist as easily as a sheep would tear up a mouthful of grass. When the trunk was finally stripped bare, I assumed it would have to stop, but it simply clamped its huge flat mouth down on one end of the trunk and twisted its massive neck. The trunk splintered and broke, leaving the Dracus with a large but manageable mouthful that it bolted down more or less whole. Denner and I took the opportunity to eat some lunch of our own, just some flatbread, sausage, and the rest of my carrots. I was hesitant to trust the food in the box, as there was the distinct possibility that the fellow living here had been some manner of crazy.
It still amazes me that no one around here has ever seen it, Denner said. People have probably caught glimpses, I said.
The swineherd said everyone knows there's something dangerous in these woods. They probably just assumed it was a demon or some nonsense like that. Denner glanced back at me, an amused curl to her mouth.
Says the fellow who came to town looking for the Chandrian.
That's different, I protested hotly. I don't go around spouting fairy stories and touching iron. I am here so I can learn the truth, so I can have information that comes from somewhere more reliable than third-hand stories.
I didn't mean to touch a nerve, Denner said, taken aback.
She looked back down below.
It really is an incredible animal.
When I read about it, I didn't really believe about the fire, I admitted. It seemed a little far-fetched to me.
More far-fetched than a lizard as big as a horse cart?
That's just a matter of size. But fire isn't a natural thing. If nothing else, where does it keep the fire? It's obviously not burning inside.
Didn't they explain it in the book you read? Denner asked.
The author had some guesses, but that's all. He couldn't catch one to dissect it.
Understandable, Denner said as she watched the Drakkers casually nudge over another tree and begin eating that one as well. What sort of a net or cage would hold it?
He had some interesting theories, though, I said. You know how cow manure gives off a gas that burns?
Denner turned to look at me and laughed. No, really?
I nodded, grinning. Farm kids will strike sparks onto a fresh cow pat and watch it burn. That's why farmers have to be careful about storing manure. The gas can build up and explode.
I'm a city girl, she said, chuckling. We didn't play those sorts of games.
You missed some big fun, I said. The author suggested that the Dracus just stores that gas in a bladder of some kind. The real question is how it lights the gas. The author has a clever idea about arsenic, which makes sense chemically. Arsenic and coal gas will explode if you put them together. That's how you get marsh lights in swamps. But I think that's a little unreasonable. If it had that much arsenic in its body, it would poison itself.
Mm-hmm,
Denner said, still watching the Dracus below. But if you think about it, all it needs is a tiny spark to ignite the gas, I said. And there are plenty of animals that can create enough galvanic force for a spark. Clip eels, for example, can generate enough to kill a man, and they're only a couple of feet long.
I gestured toward the Dracus.
Something that big could certainly generate enough for a spark.
I was hoping that Denner would be impressed by my ingenuity, but she seemed distracted by the scene below.
You're not really listening to me, are you?
Not so much, she said, turning to me and giving a smile. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. It eats wood. Wood burns. Why wouldn't it breathe fire?
While I tried to think of a response to that, she pointed down into the valley.
Look at the trees down there. Do they look odd to you?
Aside from being destroyed and mostly eaten, I asked, not particularly.
Look how they're arranged. It's hard to see because the place is a shambles, but it looks like they were growing in rows, like someone planted them.
Now that she pointed it out, it did look like a large section of the trees had been in rows before the Drakkers came. A dozen rows with a score of trees each. Most of them were now only stumps or empty holes.
Why would someone plant trees in the middle of a forest? She mused. It's not an orchard. Did you see any fruit?
I shook my head.
And those trees are the only ones the Drakkar's has been eating, she said. There's the big clear spot in the middle. The others he knocks down, but those he knocks down and eats. She squinted. What kind of tree is it eating right now?
I can't tell from here, I said.
Maple? Does it have a sweet tooth?
We looked for a while longer. Then Denna got to her feet.
Well, the important thing is that it's not going to run over and breathe fire down our backs. Let's go see what's at the other end of that narrow path. I'm guessing it's a way out of here.
We headed down the ladder and made our slow, winding way along the bottom of the tiny crevasse. It twisted and turned for another 20 feet before opening up into a tiny box canyon with steep walls rising away on every side. There was no way out, but it was obviously being put to some use. The place had been cleared of plants, leaving a packed dirt floor. Two long fire pits had been dug, and resting over the pits on brick platforms were large metal pans. They almost resembled the rendering vats that knackers use for tallow. But these were wide, flat, and shallow, like baking pans for enormous pies.
It does have a sweet tooth, Denna laughed. This fellow was making maple candy here, or syrup.
I moved closer to look. There were buckets laying around of the sort that could carry maple sap so it could be boiled down. I opened the door of a tiny ramshackle shed and saw more buckets, long wooden paddles for stirring the sap, scrapers for getting it out of the pans. But it didn't feel right. There were plenty of maple trees in the forest. It didn't make sense to cultivate them, and why pick such an out-of-the-way place? Maybe the fellow was simply crazy. Idly, I picked up one of the scrapers and looked at it. The edge was smeared dark, like it had been scraping tar.
Eeh!
Denna said behind me.
Bitter! I think they burned it.
I turned around and saw Denna standing by one of the fire pits. She had pried a large disc of sticky material out of the bottom of one of the pans and taken a bite out of it. It was black, not the deep amber color of maple candy. I suddenly realized what was really going on here.
Don't!
She looked at me, puzzled.
It's not that bad, she said, her words muffled through her sticky mouthful. It's strange, but not really unpleasant.
I stepped over to her and knocked it out of her hand. Her eyes flashed angrily at me. Spit it out, I snapped. Now, it's poison. Her expression went from angry to terrified in a flash. She opened her mouth and let the wad of dark stuff fall to the ground. Then she spat, her saliva thick and black. I pressed my water bottle into her hands. Rinse your mouth out, I said. Rinse and spit it out. She took the bottle, and then I remembered it was empty. We'd finished it during lunch. I took off running, scrambling through the narrow passage. I darted up the ladder, grabbed the water skin, then down and back to the small canyon. Denna was sitting on the canyon floor, looking very pale and wide-eyed. I thrust the water skin into her hands, and she gulped so quickly that she choked, then gagged a bit as she spat it out. I reached into the fire pit, pushing my hand deep into the ashes until I found the unburned coals underneath. I brought up a handful of unburned charcoal. I shook my hand, scattering most of the ashes away, then thrust the handful of black coals at her. Eat this, I said. She looked at me blankly. Do it! I shook the handful of coals at her. If you don't chew this up and swallow it, I'll knock you out and force it down your throat. I put some in my own mouth.
Look, it's fine. Just do it.
My tone softened, became more pleading than commanding.
Denna, trust me.
She took some coals and put them in her mouth. Face pale and eyes beginning to brim with tears, she gritted up a mouthful and took a drink of water to wash it down, grimacing.
They're harvesting goddamn offalum here, I said. I'm an idiot for not seeing it sooner.
Denna started to say something, but I cut her off.
Don't talk, keep eating as much as you can stomach.
She nodded solemnly, her eyes wide. She chewed, choked a little, and swallowed the charcoal with another mouthful of water. She ate a dozen mouthfuls in quick succession, then rinsed her mouth out again.
What's offalum?
She asked softly. A drug. Those are Denna trees.
You just had a whole mouthful of Denna resin. I sat down next to her. My hands were shaking. I lay them flat against my legs to hide it. She was quiet at that. Everyone knew about Denna resin. In Tarbin, the knackers had to come for the stiff bodies of sweet-eaters that overdosed in the dockside alleys and doorways. How much did you swallow? I asked. I was just chewing it like toffee. Her face went pale again.
There's still some stuck in my teeth.
I touched the water skin. Keep rinsing. She swished the water from cheek to cheek before spitting and repeating the process. I tried to guess at how much of the drug she had in her system, but there were too many variables. I didn't know how much she had swallowed, how refined this resin was, if the farmers had taken any steps to filter or purify it. Her mouth worked as her tongue felt around her teeth.
Okay, I'm clean.
I forced a laugh.
You're anything but clean,
I said.
Your mouth is all black. You look like a kid that's been playing in the coal bin. You aren't much better, she said. You look like a chimney sweep.
She reached out to touch my bare shoulder. I must have torn my shirt against the rocks in my rush to get the water skin. She gave a wan smile that didn't touch her frightened eyes at all.
Why do I have a belly full of coals?
Charcoal is like a chemical sponge, I said. It soaks up drugs and poisons. She brightened a little.
All of them?
I considered lying, then thought better of it. Most. You got it into you pretty quickly. It will soak up a lot of what you swallowed.
How much?
About 6 parts in 10, I said. Hopefully a little more.
How do you feel? Scared, she said. Shaky. Other than that, no different.
She shifted nervously where she sat and put her hand on the sticky disc of resin I'd knocked away from her earlier. She flicked it away and wiped her hand nervously on her trousers.
How long will it be before we know?
I don't know how much they refined it, I said. If it's still raw, it will take longer to work its way into your system, which is good, as the effects will be spread out over a longer period of time. I felt for her pulse in her neck. It was racing, which didn't tell me anything. Mine was racing too.
Look up here,
I gestured with my raised hand and watched her eyes. Her pupils were sluggish, responding to the light. I lay my hand on her head, and under the pretext of lifting her eyelid a little, I pressed my finger against the bruise on her temple hard. She didn't flinch or show the least hint that it pained her.
Thought I was imagining it before,
Denna said, looking up at me.
But your eyes really do change color. Normally they're bright green with a ring of gold around the inside.
I got them from my mother, I said.
But I've been watching. When you broke the pump handle yesterday, they went dull green, muddy. And when the swineherd made that comment about the roux, they went dark for just a moment. I thought it was just the light, but now I can see it's not.
I'm surprised you noticed, I said.
The only other person to ever point it out was an old teacher of mine, and he was an arcanist, which means it's pretty much his job to notice things. Well, it's my job to notice things about you.
She cocked her head a bit.
People probably are distracted by your hair. It's so bright. It's pretty. Pretty distracting. And your face is really expressive. You're always in control of it, even the way your eyes behave. But not the color.
She gave a faint smile.
But they're pale now, like green frost. You must be terribly afraid.
I'm guessing it's old-fashioned lust, I said in my roughest tones. It's not often a beautiful girl lets me get this close to her.
You always tell me the most beautiful lies,
she said, looking away from me and down to her hands.
Am I going to die?
No, I said firmly.
Absolutely not. Could...
She looked up at me and smiled again, her eyes wet but not overflowing.
Could you just say it out loud for me?
You aren't going to die, I said, getting to my feet. Come on, let's see if our lizard friend is gone yet. I wanted to keep her moving around and distracted, so we each had another little drink and headed back to the lookout. The Dracus lay sleeping in the sun.
I took the opportunity to stuff the blanket and the dried meat into my travel sack.
I felt guilty about stealing from the dead before, I said. But now, at least now we know why he was hiding in the middle of nowhere with a crossbow and a lookout and all that,
Denna said.
A minor mystery solved.
I started to fasten up my travel sack, then, as an afterthought, packed the crossbow bolts as well.
What are those for?
She asked. They're worth something, I said. I'm in debt to a dangerous person. I could use every penny. I trailed off, my mind working. Denna looked at me, and I could see her mind jumping to the same conclusion.
Do you know how much that much resin would be worth?
She asked. Not really, I said, thinking about the £30, each with a wafer of black sticky resin congealed in the bottom, as big as a dinner plate.
I'm guessing a lot. An awful lot.
Denna shifted back and forth on her feet.
Quoth, I don't know how I feel about this. I've seen girls get hooked on this stuff. I need money, she gave a bitter laugh. I don't even have a second set of clothes right now.
She looked worried.
But I don't know if I need it this badly.
I'm thinking of apothecaries, I said quickly. They'd refine it into medicine. It's a powerful painkiller. The price won't be nearly as good as if we went to the other sort of people, but still, half a loaf. Denna smiled broadly.
I'd love half a loaf, especially since my cryptic prick of a patron seems to have disappeared.
We headed back down into the canyon. This time, as I emerged from the narrow passageway, I saw the evaporating pans in a different light. Now each of them was the equivalent of a heavy coin in my pocket. Next term's tuition, new clothes, freedom from my debt with Devi. I saw Denna looking at the trays with the same fascination, though hers was somewhat more glassy-eyed than mine.
I could live comfortably for a year off this, she said, and not be beholden to anyone.
I went to the tool shed and grabbed a scraper for each of us. At the end of a few minutes' work, we had combined all the black sticky pieces into a single wad the size of a sweet melon. She shivered a bit, then looked at me smiling. Her cheeks were flushed.
I suddenly feel really good.
She crossed her arms across her chest, rubbing her hands up and down.
Really, really good. I don't think it's just the thought of all that money.
It's the resin, I said. It's a good sign that it's taken this long to hit you. I'd have been worried if it had happened sooner. I gave her a serious look. Now listen, you need to let me know if you feel any heaviness in your chest or have any trouble breathing. So long as neither of those things happen, you should be fine. Denna nodded, then drew a deep breath and let it out again.
Oh, sweet angel, Audl above, I feel great.
She gave me an anxious expression, but the wide grin kept spilling out.
Am I going to get addicted from this?
I shook my head and she sighed with relief.
You know the damnedest thing? I'm scared about getting addicted, but I don't care that I'm scared. I've never felt like this before. No wonder our big scaly friend keeps coming back for more. Merciful Talu, I said. I didn't even think of that. That's why it was trying to claw its way in here. It can smell the resin. It's been eating the trees for two span, three or four a day. The biggest sweet-eater of them all coming back to get his fix.
Denna laughed. Then her expression went horrified.
How many trees were left?
Two or three, I said, thinking of the rows of empty holes and broken stumps. But it may have eaten another since we've been back here.
Have you ever seen a sweet-eater when they've got the hunger on them?
Denna said, her face stricken.
They go crazy.
I know, I said, thinking of the girl I'd seen in Tarbin dancing naked in the snow.
What do you think it's going to do when the trees run out?
I thought for a long moment. It's going to go looking for more, and it's going to be desperate, and it knows the last place where it found the trees had a little house that smelled like people. We're going to have to kill it.
Kill it?
She laughed, then pressed her hands against her mouth again.
With nothing but my good singing voice and your manly bravado, She started to giggle uncontrollably, despite the fact that she was holding both her hands in front of her mouth.